Hi, this is James Devine, and I am an educator who has come out of the trenches. Listen in as my friend and colleague Dana Goodyear shares stories and tips from other educators who have come out of the trenches.
Welcome to the Out of the Trenches podcast. This is Dana Goodyear. Thanks for listening.
My next guest is Eric Francis. Eric is an international author, presenter, and speaker with over 25 years of experience in education. He is the author of Now That's a Good Question, How to Promote Cognitive Rigor Through Classroom Questioning, published by ASCD. His book, Deconstructing Death of Knowledge, A Method and Model for Deeper Learning and Teaching, will be published by Solution Tree International in October 2021. Eric is the owner of Maverick Education, providing academic professional development guidance and support on how to develop and deliver teaching and learning experiences that are academically rigorous, socially and emotionally supportive, and student responsive. He is also ranked consistently as one of the world's top 30 educational professionals by the international research organization, Global Gurus. Welcome to the podcast, Eric.
Thank you. Thank you, Dana. Thank you for having me.
And I think I butchered the name of your book. It's Deeper Teaching and Learning, correct?
That's okay. As long as I got the regular title, which is Deconstructing Depth of Knowledge, D-O-K, that's totally fine. No worries about that.
Well, thank you for being on the podcast. And, we had a pre-chat. We talked a lot about just some of your experiences leading up to where you are now. So I'll start out like I start out with everybody. Tell me about a time when you were in the trenches and managed to crawl out.
I would say my first experience being a site administrator, an assistant principal, it was an interesting experience, and I take ownership kind of about the way it was, because it didn't turn out really great for me at the time professionally. Later it did. Mm-hmm. I became an assistant principal at a middle school in a district that actually I started my career in, and went back to the middle school. And the unfortunate thing is that the year before, they inherited, I inherited a number of personnel, operational, managerial issues that mm-hmm. were going on. I don't want to get into like the knee deep of the hoopla with it, but it's probably like the worst type you can have. Mm-hmm. And I kind of inherited that. Well, I guess I say, there was some sexual inappropriate behavior amongst mm-hmm. the kids. The assistant principal was before me. He left, and I kind of inherited that and came in. And it was also tough because he was really a very, very well-respected, beloved guy. Now mm-hmm. here I come. I'm filling in the shoes. And to be honest, I don't even know if I was ready to make that leap yet. I dated students the year before at another school. And really, I wanted to make the leap to be an assistant principal for two reasons. One, moving up on the ladder. And two, the unfortunate thing is that when I was dealing with students, I was a teacher on assignment and I was doing administrative duties, but I didn't get the salary. Mm-hmm. It was a tough year. It was tough, not because of the student population. The student population, it was actually high social economic. Mm-hmm. And the parents were very involved and the parents were very vocal. And it wasn't that. A lot of it, I think, was a lot of repercussions and consequences about what happened the year before with those teachers and the scandal that they went through. It was pretty scandalous. It was in the papers out and everything out there in Arizona. So I didn't last more than a year. And it was more so an agreement to say that this just isn't working. But, to turn a tragedy into a success, because I was really devastated. I mean, I had my whole career plotted out. Classroom teacher, site administrator, principal, director of curriculum instruction or professional development somewhere, assistant superintendent, go teach college, all mapped out. I got kind of knocked off the track. So instead of going for another assistant principal position, I went to the State Department of Education here in Arizona, where it just completely changed my perspective of education. I learned more about policy. I learned more about budgets and finances and federal and state funding. And it really kind of led me to the career I am today. So while it was very, very, very tough at the time, and it was really challenging, and my ownership was I wasn't ready. And I didn't really have any mentors. I had coaches, but the coaches more so were like, well, what should I do about this? Well, I don't know. What do you think we should do about this? It was like a mind check. And it wasn't really effective in terms of mentoring with that. But I'd say crawling out of the trenches is that it put me on a path that I would have never foresaw for myself, you know, this doing, you know, I always wanted to be an instructional leader, which is why I went to school administration, but I felt like I was anything but an instructional leader. I was a cop without a badge, a psychologist, you know, and basically it put me on this path of professional development and doing instructional leadership. And now I've been a, you know, what I guess they call an education consultant. I like to call myself a professional education specialist. And I've been on this career path, and for the last 9 years, lucky it hasn't slowed down. The pandemic has really created a trench, but crawling out, and everyone seems to be crawling out of it too. So that's kind of, so I guess the lesson learned of it is really think about the position you want and the position that fits you. Don't just go after it because it's money or it's something that's higher up on not only the professional scale, but the salary scale. And it's funny because I've been asked to be an assistant principal and a principal and go back and run the school. And I just realized it's not for me. You know, that's just kind of not what I am. I'm more of a professional development provider. I'm more of the person who wants to look at curriculum, look at instruction, look at assessment, look and not, you know, do a lot of the more of the administrative leadership of the site, but more so coming up with programs, coming up with plans and stuff. So I guess that's my story and I'm sticking with it.
Yeah, that's such a fresh take on having that trench moment, right? And going through a difficult situation and then finding out where, you know, your expertise is best served. And I think like you're kind of saying it, you're more of a macro level thinker, right? When looking at the whole system, working with the State Department, than that micro at the building.
Well, even micro at the building, I think the hard part of it, you know, I think the part of it, a lot of it was youth. A lot of it was insecurity on my part, probably even arrogance, you know, no, I'm the assistant principal, you know? And I think, you know, you really got to be ready. You got to ask yourself if you're ready, and you got to ask yourself, why do you want to do this? I mean, I didn't want to leave the classroom. I felt like I needed to have, you know, more so. I mean, I just had my second child with my wife, and, you know, we were two teacher salaries, and I need to move up the salary schedule. And it wasn't going to happen, you know, by being in the classroom, unfortunately. And so, you know, that was kind of the reasons for it. At the time, it was horrible. It was really a terrible experience. But looking back in retrospect, it was something that set me on this path and got me to talk to you today, you know, because I probably wouldn't be doing what I'm doing right now if I did not have that lack of success. And I think probably one of the best lessons it is that you always can bounce, you know? I mean, when you hit the ground, you hit the bottom, people say you splat. No, I say you bounce, and you just gotta decide how you bounce back with it. So I turned that lack of success into something that's even more successful than I ever thought it would be.
Well, let's dive into your new book first. Can you tell me a little bit about what it's built off of? You talked in the pre-chat about it's about an RTI model. It's coming out in October. So what can people learn when the book is available and how will it help them?
Well, the book's coming out in October. Pre-sales are going to be the end of June. So actually, when we're recording this, it'll be next week. So pre-sales will be So by the time this airs, probably it'll be all up and everything. It's called Deconstructing Depth of Knowledge, a Method and Model for Deeper Teaching and Learning. About 10 years ago, we were introduced to a concept and a framework called Depth of Knowledge and Webb's DOK levels as part of the implementation and rollout of the Common Core State Standards. The unfortunate thing is that we were given an inaccurate document, and that document is the DOK wheel. If you've ever seen the DOK wheel, it's four spokes and it's full of verbs. Well, depth of knowledge is not about the verb. It's about what comes after the verb. So, and in fact, Norman Webb also did not create the wheel. It was created by somebody who was an elementary teacher I heard out in Florida, who just uploaded to the internet and said, this is depth of knowledge. Oh my gosh. So depth of knowledge actually started out as an alignment criteria. So Norman Webb created depth of knowledge. He created this as one of 12 criterion for alignment studies. So you should look at your learning intensity of your standards and say, what is the level of depth of knowledge demanded? Level one, two, three, or four, based upon what exactly and how deeply students must demonstrate their learning. Then you look at your assessment items and you say, what's that DOK level and how closely aligned are they? If it addresses the standard fully, or more than three items on the assessment address the standard fully, then the assessment and the item is fully aligned. If it does 50%, it's acceptably. If the student can demonstrate their learning, but not the level demanded by the standard, it's insufficiently. So Florida was actually one of the first states to do their alignment studies with depth of knowledge. Traditionally, people use Bloom's taxonomy. Well, again, like I said, someone just uploaded that image to the internet, and Karen has in her first book, Toolkit for Instruction and Assessment, I think that's the name of it, she pointed out how it's possibly based on this thing.
Okay.
This is the Bloom's Hot Wheel that was developed by Barbara Clark in her book, Growing Up Gifted, as a gifted specialist. So the only real difference between the DOK wheel and this is that this wheel has five spokes full of verbs and the DOK wheel has four. So what Karen Hess did with it, she basically created this matrix where she superimposed Bloom's taxonomy with Webb's DOK level. So you should be able to use this matrix to say, okay, what is the verb that the students have to demonstrate and use? So that's in the rows. And then you say, what is the depth of knowledge demanded? And you look in the columns, and that will determine the cognitive rigor. What I did with it was that I turned it into what schools have been trying to do with depth of knowledge, and what I've got feedback about how to use it and just being creative with it. I turned it into a method and model of deeper teaching and learning. So it functions like an RTI, multi-field system support. So the way it works is, and this is going to, I think, really work because as we come back from this pandemic and our kids go return to on-site, learning didn't stop. Okay. If we determine the depth of knowledge demanded by the standard, and we say this is the DOK level, and we treat that learning intention of a standard like a finish line to say, this is the finish line you have to cross to be proficient in fifth grade in fractions, okay? And we start there, and then we determine where the students are on their pathway of proficiency. So what level of depth of knowledge can they demonstrate their learning? That's where the teaching and learning begins. So let's say, I'll use multiplication. Let's say the standard is fluently multiply multi-digit numbers using the standard algorithm. That's the end. So then I'll determine a DOK level. It's probably about a DOK one, maybe DOK two, because they have to apply knowledge concepts and skills to establish a plan with examples. Those are the DOK scriptures I use. So what I'm saying is this is the finish line. Think of like an obstacle course. You know where the finish line is.
Okay.
Now, where are you on that course? Like, where are you in that pathway to proficiency? Okay. Do you know what the standard algorithm for a multiplication is? No. Do you know what a multi-digit number is? Yes. Okay, good. Let's start there. Do you know how to multiply? Yes. Okay, good. Let's start there. So now what I'm doing is, instead of saying, what don't you know, I'm searching for what you do know.
Okay.
Teaching and testing for depth of knowledge starts and stops with the standards, but teaching and learning for depth of knowledge begins at the level where the students are. And then builds upon their strengths, successes, so they can rise to, reach, and go beyond what I call the DOK bar. That's the top.
Okay.
So what you're doing is you're using depth of knowledge as a strength builder. So it's okay to go down to the foundational DOK levels. It doesn't mean less. It's more so reduced. And that's another thing I talk about with it is that how we can use this and describe four different deeper ways students can demonstrate their learning.
Okay, let's talk a little bit about those ways that you're going to include in your training. You talked to me a little bit in the pre-chat about the strengths and skills that they have and that we've just survived a global crisis. So we want to build upon those skills, that the students have learned of resiliency and creativity.
Right. So what you want to do is that next year, go into next year thinking, realizing that there's four things we know, okay? There's four things we know for certain. Number one, there's been this thing called learning loss.
Yeah.
But learning loss is not inherent with the pandemic. It's not basically something that's a result of the pandemic. Learning loss is basically something that happens all the time in education. Kids get learning loss from summer vacation. Research shows there's learning loss from bad scheduling, bad teaching, okay? So know that that's one thing we know. The other thing we know is that there are gaps probably in learning, because a lot of times it's hard to fit in everything you have to in 180 days or so. Okay, so there are going to be some gaps. And also because some schools have decided to take summer breaks, some kids did not do summer school, they're going to have, again, that gap in learning loss. But here's the two positives that we need to really think about. Number one, students are coming back to us with a diverse, unique, new set of strengths and skills. Okay. Pedagogy can't be our obstacle anymore. We can't say, oh, they're too young to do that, because guess what? Okay. You have kindergartners who are now more computer savvy than ever. First grade, second grade, third grade. We have kids who basically learned also not only how to demonstrate their learning at rigorous levels, but also to be resilient. Okay. They survived this thing. And that's the other thing I want, you know, people to realize, is that these kids and us as educators, we survived, and for some point even thrived during a global pandemic. So how can we tap into that? And that's kind of like where my focus is a lot with what I'm trying to tell teachers. You know, you mentioned that my PD is what I call academically rigorous, social, emotionally supportive, and student responsive. What I'm trying to also focus on is that there's a new three R's in education. And what if that three R is, number one, rigor? And we define rigor based upon students demonstrating different levels of thinking based upon whatever learning taxonomy you use, Bloom's, Marzano's, Solow, and understand and use their depth of knowledge in different contexts. So with Webb's DOK levels, there's four different deeper ways you can demonstrate your learning. You can either recall information or recall how to answer correctly. You can either apply knowledge, concept, and skills, or use information and basic reasoning to establish and explain with examples. DOK three would be you think strategically or use complex reasoning supported by evidence to examine and explain. And the simplest way to do that is give the kids an answer and ask them to justify why it's correct or incorrect, or ask them what if, which is going to be a part of their lexicon, because it's a big Disney show about Marvel movies that's coming out about what if, and it shows about their stories. And a DLK four is you either use extended reasoning supported by expertise, or think extensively how you could explore and explain with examples and evidence over an extended period. So that's the rigor. So the rigor is DOK one, answer it. DOK two, use and explain it. DOK three, use it and prove it. And DOK four, go for it. Okay. So you're going to do things like that. The relationships is that, and we talk about a student focus, is how can we have students establish, examine, explore connections with the content, with the with their classmates, and with the community. So you're looking at relationships, like you're building relationships, you're really getting an investment, not only in terms of your relationship interpersonally with others, but also form a relationship with the content, you know, take ownership of it, and also form a relationship with your community. We got to reconnect these kids. They've been sitting here learning and interacting like this. And the other one is resilience. And resilience has now become a lot of the focus to talk about how kids can basically survive and thrive in hardship. It's replaced grit in a little bit, if you know about the concept of grit. And what I say about resilience is that resilience is how can we take our students' education, what they've learned, their experiences, what they've gone through, and their endowments, their personal skills, their innate talents, and develop that into strength, skills, and a sense of self.
Okay.
I know this is what makes me strong because I have these skills and that's me. Okay. So again, I think that's going to be probably the new three R's. And that's a lot of what I'm going to try to focus on, as well as how to use depth of knowledge accurately. So that's going to be kind of my focus and mantra going into the new year.
Yeah. And I think your book's coming out at an essential time, just as we're kind of entering this post-pandemic era, and you know, people are reevaluating how they teach, how students learn, and, you know, building upon the school, the skills that kids already have, right? But looking at those three R's as well, right? That we're, we want to not go back to everything that we've done in the past, right? We want to become better. And, you know, bringing in somebody like you to explain this and do PD, I think is having, you know, will have a huge effect on some of those schools as well.
Thank you. And I think a lot of it, we also need to, we need to be patient with ourselves as educators. Yeah. Mm-hmm. You know, a lot of times what I'm doing right now with a lot of schools is that they're asking me to do professional development, which is great. And a lot of schools are also hesitant of it because, you know, we haven't really been in a classroom, many of us, for almost mm-hmm. a year and a half. Like my daughter was saying to me the other week, she goes, you realize, you know, I really haven't had a normal school year since eighth grade, and now she's in 10th. Mm-hmm. So, you know, what we need to do is really that first quarter, we need to basically focus on reestablishing the relationships. Mm-hmm. And that means making the connections. That means rediscovering who we are. Before we set sail on that sea of rigor, we really need to basically get our sea legs back, and we need to feel mm-hmm. comfortable. And it's getting to know each other. It's helping ease each other in there and reconnecting. And that's the thing about relationships. I think first quarter, we really should focus on the relationships. The rigor will come, okay? Mm-hmm. Because rigor is not hard. Rigor is challenging. Rigor is about thinking deeply. You can do that with building relationships. It's about expressing and sharing the depth and extent of your understanding. But really first quarter, focus on rebuilding those relationships, establishing not only just the routines, but also getting the kids to feel reconnected and acclimated, going into a classroom, feeling safe in the classroom, realizing hopefully that there's not going to be social distancing, realizing that, you know, we can smile at each other because we're not mm-hmm. wearing our masks and communicate like that. That's what I would recommend a lot of schools do. Really focus on the relationships at first and then let the rigor come. And that's be better for not just the kids, but also the teachers as well.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah, I really like that part about reestablishing kind of those procedures, since we had to kind of veer off and do the pandemic procedures, but now we're, you know, we're reestablishing what that means to, you know, live in this post-pandemic era. Right. Let's talk a little bit about the 100 Stop series. So both of us are connected with Rick Jetter. He's been on the podcast. And the 100 Things All Teachers Should Stop Doing came out in May. So what chapter did you write, and what kind of message did you want to convey through your chapter?
I wrote chapter 100. my chapter is really funny. A funny story about this. My chapter is, stop teaching if you don't love the profession. Mm-hmm. And Rick and I are we've been friends for years. I mean, Rick and I talk probably about once or twice a week mm-hmm. during a week, always texting or on the phone. We call each other like every Sunday. Rick said to me, man, I really want you to write that stop teaching if you don't love the profession. I said, Rick, I can write that in one word, one page, clicked. You know,
yeah.
So what I really want to do, and I really want to tap into kind of like what my experience was as that assistant principal, I thought mm-hmm. my career was done. You know, I thought that now that I had this lack of success as an assistant principal, I thought that basically now I'm going to have to talk about, well, why, you know, did I only last a year there? Where can I go? Because, you know, they always talk about in districts or in local education agencies, you have to teach, they prefer leaders who are out of sight before you can go to district office. Mm-hmm. So what I really did was, is I shaped it to say that if you don't love the profession anymore, maybe it's not so much you don't love the profession, but you don't love what you're doing in the profession. Mm-hmm. So maybe, you know, as a teacher, if you're not enjoying being in the classroom, why don't you go look into being an instructional coach? Mm-hmm. If your passion is more about advocacy, which has really become huge with educators right now, maybe you can become an education advocate. Maybe, you know, you can get more involved in your state or local association or union. In Arizona, we don't have unions. We have associations out here. If you want more of a leadership position, you can go for leadership. But really think about what kind of leader you want to be. It takes a special type of person to be a site administrator. It takes a special type of person to be in all those roles. I mean, when I was an assistant principal, I was in charge of discipline. So I was getting like everything. I mean, the joke I used to say is my grandfathers were NYPD officers. They were glad I became a police officer. They always wanted me to be. Because I used to use interrogation techniques. Fourth hour. If the tips of your ears turn red, they're lying. If they roll their eyes to the left, they're lying. And if they go, no, then they're definitely lying. Okay. Or, you know, and you know, it really takes a special kind of person to do that. And you also have to really look at who's working with you to say, you may assign somebody to do discipline as more of like an academic person, more of an instructional leader person. So that was kind of my chapter to say, don't look at it as this is the end of your career, figure out other places you can go. And the other thing is that two things, that one, it's okay to leave the profession. You know, and you have a set of skills as a teacher that a lot of companies will want. You can do public speaking. You can manage people. I mean, if you can herd first graders like cats, you can herd adults, you know? And basically, or there's now become this cottage industry of kind of like what I do, what Rick does, with a lot of us people who provide professional development and also write books. That you can get out there and start this whole career path. I mean, my thing with professional development started when I was at the state education agency. I did training. I trained teachers on English language development, structured English immersion, and then how to develop Title I programs. And then I just started designing my own professional development instructional strategies based on what I use as a teacher. Mm-hmm. And I just started applying for conferences, you know, and if you are a teacher at a site, it's better for you than it is for me, because number one, financially, you can ask your principal, hey, I want to go to this conference and I'll present and I'll show the great things that we're doing there. And two, a lot of the conferences want actual classroom practitioners. They don't want guys like me who think I'm going to sell a product or something. So there is this outlet, there is this branch, and you can choose to write a book. You can choose to write a blog. You can do a podcast like, you know, you're doing right now. I think that's also the great thing that Rick is doing with the 100 Stop series is that, yeah, there's some authors in there, but he's allowed people who've never written a book to have a voice. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and if you look at like the Twitter feeds on it and you look at everybody who's like attached to that book, everyone's so proud, like, you know, yeah, I'm a part of that book. I'm a part of that book. I'm a part of this. And there's more to what you're doing and there's more to you. Figure out what it is you're doing and why you're doing it. And that's really that whole Simon Sinek, find your why, start with why. I did actually a PD on it, where it's like superhero origins, where I combined superhero origins with find your why and start your why. And it's like, you ask, why did you decide to wear the cape and cowl? Okay, so your why is, you come up with a mantra, to blank, so that blank. So my why is like to challenge thinking so that people will think deeply and make connections about things they'll never thought about before. How do I do it? I ask questions. I push for depth of knowledge. I'm always pushing to basically, you know, boundaries, which is what Rick's company is, pushing boundaries. What do? I provide professional development as a matter of education. See what I mean? Go back. Find out what was your origin. Why did you become a teacher? It's like Batman became Batman because his parents were killed. Superman became Superman because he was sent from another world and his father instilled in him the values of a Roman farmer. You know, Spider-Man became Spider-Man because he went, great power comes great responsibility. Why? How do they do it? Batman uses utility belts and martial arts. Superman, you know, flies around straight. Spider-Man uses web shooters and crawls walls. Who are they? I'm Batman. I'm Spider-Man. I'm Superman. Say that. You need to get back, if that's the thing, if you're lost with it. What makes you say, I'm Mr. Francis, or whatever you are as a teacher? And that's kind of what my chapter in a roundabout way was that to say, stop teaching if you don't love the profession, but really try to figure out where your path can take you. You don't have to leave education if you just don't like what you're doing.
This podcast is a proud member of the Teach Better Podcast Network. Better today, better tomorrow, and the podcast to get you there. Explore more podcasts at www.teachbetterpodcastnetwork.com. Now let's get back to the episode.
Let's talk a little bit about questioning and inquiry. You mentioned in the pre-chat that you might write another book about that, and some examples about asking good questions in classrooms.
Yeah, well, it's interesting, this journey of questioning and inquiry, and there's a lot of people speaking in this space. You know, there's a lot of books out there and a lot of great books out there. Mm-hmm. One of the things I realized actually in this journey with questioning is I wrote this book called Now That's a Good Question. And in the book, I introduce 8 different types of questions that we can pose and present to our students that will have them demonstrate what Karen Hess calls cognitive rigor, demonstrating different levels of thinking, understanding, using depth of knowledge. Mm-hmm. What I found really fascinating is how teachers struggle to come up with questions. Mm-hmm. And it's not anyone's fault with that. And the majority of teachers with it, questioning is uncomfortable because mm-hmm. when I ask you a question, you're expected to give me an answer. And if you say, I don't know, it's often frowned upon. And it's okay to say, I don't know. Mm-hmm. We need to allow kids to say, I don't know, because that is the doorway to inquiry, the doorway to understanding. What we need to also have them communicate with us to say what it is that they don't know. And you can't just let them get away and say, oh, no. Like when I basically mm-hmm. used to ask a question in my class, the kids would go, oh, no. Mm-hmm. And I say, I don't expect you to. That's what you're going to find out. This is the instructional focus. If you don't know by the end of the week, then I have a problem because I'm mm-hmm. the teacher. I have to own it. I have to help them make sure that they get to learn that. So there's a lot out there with questioning. And I wrote Now That's a Good Question actually in response and support of essential questions, which is a big thing we've been using for years. The great work of Jay McTighe and Grant Wiggins. But there was a lot of confusion about what an essential question is. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Jay McTighe and Grant Wiggins says it's, you know, something you can't just answer with a simple yes or no. It's very, very deep. It's very profound. Grant Wiggins was very influenced by Ted Sizer, who came up with that with his Essential Schools, where he talks about it's the core ideas and enduring understandings of the subject. And then you have John Larmer coming in with project-based learning, who talks about the driving questions. So what I did with it was that I said there's 4 different types of essential questions. Mm-hmm. There's universal, those big thematic questions like what is life? The overarching addresses the anchor standards of a core content area or any content area that can be asked over and over again at any grade level. And the topical is about the unit you're teaching, and the driving engages you in an authentic learning experience where you can develop your talents and your thinking and your expertise. But what I'm seeing a lot is that teachers are actually struggling to think and phrase in the form of a question. And if you look at question stems out there or sample question stems, they'll say like, determine what, or explain how, or mm-hmm. describe what. Okay, that's not a question. Mm-hmm. Okay, if it makes you sound like R. Lee Emery in Full Metal Jacket, or when he's the soldier in a Toy Story, you're not asking a question. Would you agree to disagree to say, for the most part, that teachers speak mostly in making declarations because we give the information mm-hmm. and giving directions because we say, do this. We need to shift that and make it with questioning. And what I came up with a concept I call inquiring minds. So my first question is what I call the hook. Mm-hmm. And that hook piques your curiosity and interest. So I can ask you something as simple as, who's the first president of the United States? And you would tell me
George Washington.
And I'd say, what do you mean? Exactly. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Okay. How do you know that he's the first president of the United States? And then I'd say, okay. And what it does is it introduces the kids that they can go look it up. And if they look it up, they'll start seeing mentions of a guy named John Hanson, who mm-hmm. was the first president appointed under the Articles of Confederation. He didn't have the same power, but he did have a title called president. So that leads into the deeper question of, for the standard, how did the Articles of Confederation, the failures of the Articles of Confederation lead to the writing of the U.S. Constitution? That's an actual standard. Understand how the Articles of Confederation led to the writing of the U.S. Constitution. Mm-hmm. I took that into a question. An argumentative for deep would be, should George Washington continue to be credited as the first president of the United States, mm-hmm. or should we acknowledge the other 8 who were appointed under the Articles of Confederation? And there's no correct answer, but that's an argument you can do. And then the expertise question is, I'm going to give you a scenario situation where the descendants of these eight presidents appointed under Carter's Federation want the president to pass an executive order to acknowledge their ancestors. Mm-hmm. Here's five different roles. You're the lobbyist who has to come up with the argument for it. How would you do that? You're mm-hmm. the congressperson who's against it. How would you come up with an argument against it? You're the mediator who comes up with a compromise. What kind of compromise could you come up with? You're the PR person to get it out there to say, there are eight presidents before George Washington. How would you get that out there? What kind of media campaign can you come up with? You're the citizen who thinks it's a waste of time. What kind of letter can you write to the paper? So again, mm-hmm. I call it inquiring minds. And then I'd ask the kids, well, what is the first things you don't know and understand? They might say, well, what were the Articles of Federation? That's the foundational learning. Mm-hmm. So it comes from them using the QFT. So what I'm hoping to do with my next book is to teach how to teach and learn with good questions, because that's kind of what my PD has evolved into. Like when I used to first do PD, I used to come to your school armed with my book and my cognitive rigor question framework and go, okay, everybody, these are the eight type of questions we can ask. Here's mm-hmm. some of my curricular examples. Okay, now you create some. And it was a struggle. So it went to then, okay, I need to help teachers and guide teachers to shift from making declarations and giving directions to asking questions. And then from there, it became more of how I differentiate the different ways you can rephrase statements and directives into questions. And it really actually became a philosophy, because my philosophy with PD is, why is it we differentiate instruction, but we don't differentiate professional development? Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And when I do PD, I feel like that's my role, is that I need to go find out what will work for you. So it's mm-hmm. kind of walking your talk when you talk about differentiation, inquiry, and such. So that might be the sequel to Now That's a Good Question. Or I might write another DOK book. There's so many different things you can do to explore that. But mm-hmm. right now I'm really jazzed about this DOK book. It's the only one that's out there that really explicitly talks about DOK. Mm-hmm. Other books mention it, other books reference it. Unfortunately, they reference a lot of times what's already been said, or they use the wheel. Mm-hmm. This is going to be a real deep dive into DOK, and calling it deconstructing depth of knowledge. We had to get Norman Webb's permission, and he approved it. And I really hope, I do him justice with his research. It's kind of like DOK 3.0, because if he mm-hmm. did it for alignment studies and Karen Hess did it as a measure of cognitive rigor, I turned it into a method model for deeper teaching and learning. And I encourage anybody else to take this framework and really do something innovative with it.
Mm-hmm. Well, there's a lot to learn, I think, about both inquiry, questioning, and depth of knowledge. Can people find you promoting the book at different conferences, or do you have some planned like just book signings or any of that going on in the fall?
Well, the book is coming out in October. I am speaking at mostly a lot of it right now, because the conferences are not starting up yet. I will be mm-hmm. at the AMLE middle level conference presenting mm-hmm. Inquiring Minds in November. Most of what I'm doing is working with schools and districts closely at the site or at the district level. Mm-hmm. But if you want to keep in touch with me, you can contact me at www.maverick, no C's in Maverick, M-A-V-E-R-I-K. education.com. That's the name of my company. I named it after my daughters, Madison, Ava, and Amanda. Mm-hmm. And as a child of the age, you probably guess what my favorite movie is. So Top Gun, I can't believe I got to wait another year for that sequel to come out. I've already been waiting 36 years.
I know.
So again, you can go to my website, Maverick Education, M-A-V-E-R-I-K, or email me at eric@maverickeducation.com. Or I'm going to try to organize and create some online courses. Mm-hmm. Hopefully, I'll be doing some more promotion about the book, where that's kind of like in the planning stage right now. By the time this comes out, you might see things, hopefully, because I love presenting. I love working with teachers. And I really can't wait actually to get back out there on the road and be live and in person. I know some people have said, hey, this transition to virtual remote, this is really good. But man, I want to get out of my chair. Yeah, I want to, it's funny. I'll get reviews like, wow, that was a good presentation. I said, yeah, you see what it's like when I'm standing up on the stage.
Yeah.
It's so, a
different feel.
So again, just keep, keep alert at the website. The link for pre-orders and actually be probably or out by the time this comes out. Mm-hmm. It'll be available through solutiontree.com. And I'm looking forward to this new adventure in education. I hope we all look at it and treat it that way, because the changes in education are not going to come from the top. They're going to come from the classroom, and it's going to grow like a seed.
Well, out of everything we talked about today on the podcast, what's one thing in particular you'd like listeners to remember?
One of my big things, two of my big things, is that always ask yourself what if with a positive thing. Like, for example, what if we don't call it learning loss, we call it unfinished business. Okay, so you take off what if, you'll have your mantra. So make that shift to what if. The other thing I also really want to get out there, and really it's something to wrap your heads around, is that tragedy can be temporary.
Yeah.
And it is your, you decide how the story wants to end. If don't ask, why does this always happen to me? Because everything is happening to you for a purpose and a reason. And you can basically control how the story ends. You know, and the other thing is that it may not be immediate. It may not be in 5 minutes, today, tomorrow, but I do believe that we are in charge of our own destinies. So I really hope that people, if you want the change to happen in education, you make the change. Like we, like Rick calls the company pushing boundaries, push the boundaries, but understand that if you want to make an omelet, you got to break some eggs. And some people don't like eggs to break. So that's kind of my thing. Shift your focus to what if, and also realize that tragedy can be temporary and you decide how the story ends.
Well, those are great words to live by. Well, it's been a pleasure having you on the Out of the Trenches podcast today. Have a great rest of your day.
Thank you. Thank you for having me. I appreciate this opportunity.
Check out the show notes on danagoodyear.com to learn more about this guest and links to their social media. Please subscribe, share, rate, and review wherever you download this podcast. Tell your friends and colleagues about it, and if this episode resonates especially with you, be sure to share it out on social media and tag me at Out of Trenches PC.